Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer. Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. So Parliament is now prorogued, but not before handing Boris Johnson two more defeats in this September session. James, what happened last night?
So Boris Johnson predictably lost the vote for an early election and more, and there was also a humble address passed, which is basically a sweeping demand for every message related to prorogation and Yellow Hammer, which is a no-deal planning document, of a slew of government aides. This request is quite remarkable because in its attempt to get everything, it essentially refuses to distinguish between people's personal communications and their public ones, a point that the Attorney General Geoffrey Cox tried to make, which is, you know, if someone's sending a message saying, we're working on our prorogation strategy, so I won't be home for dinner, Mum, that is also going to end up in this great trawl. It is, you know, there is a real question here about whether this is parliamentary overreach. And again, this is what part of the Burko legacy, the revival of this idea of a humble address to get hold of government documents that would normally be regarded as confidential. I also think there is an issue here, which is, as you know, Tony Blair says in his memoirs, you know, he regrets the Freedom of Information Act request. The Freedom of Information, but you don't need to go that far. But I think there is a point, which is if all these messages are going to end up either in court or Parliament demands are going to be released, people are either going to start communicating by other means, so we're going to be back to post-it notes left on people's desks so they can be destroyed and not be seen, or people won't say it. So if you're a civil servant and someone comes to you with a plan to prorogue Parliament for 5 weeks, you would want to say to them, look, people are going to think, even if you say this is about the Queen's speech, people are going to think this is about Brexit. Have you really thought this through? Or have you really thought through how little time this leaves you to legislate for a Brexit deal? All that stuff. People are going to be more reticent about putting those things down in writing and giving frank and candid advice if it can all end up being forced to be released.
Yeah. And Katie, the people on Dominic Grieve's list are 8 or so advisers closest to number 10. You were shaking your head there in fear of your sources being released.
To be honest, I just think it is overreach. And like James says, it makes it very difficult for people to communicate and do their jobs if every message and the various apps they listed. So, for example, Telegram, which is also favoured by the leader's office. If you look at the Labour side, Seamus Milne and others who work very closely for Jeremy Corbyn have apparently taken to moving their communications from WhatsApp, which I didn't think was secure enough, to more secure apps, which were also named on this humble address. So I actually think, and I've spoken to figures in Labour, not the figures clearly signing this, who are a bit uneasy about the direction this is going in, because where does it end? And I do think that if we do end up with a Labour government, perhaps a Labour minority government supported by the SNP, throw the Lib Dems in, I think that actually they might come to look at some of the precedents and some of the things that have been created in this parliament and wonder if hindsight it was such a good idea, because they are going to have to live by this too. And I just think the things that have been summoned and are supposed to hand over, it's a very extreme their amount of information. And it does also seem that if, for example, I don't know how it works with journalists, but if you WhatsApp someone up asking about prorogation and one of those figures replied, does that fall into what should be released? It appears to, in which case, where does source protection come in on this? And perhaps I'm just missing something, but it doesn't feel like this is properly thought through in some respects. Now, number 10 suggests they're not going to play ball on this, so you are going to get outrage again. But both sides, I think what we've seen is people say, oh, they're ignoring convention, number 10 have no respect for Parliament. I think we have seen over the past couple of months both sides now pushing the rules to suit their agenda, and it's happening on both sides.
James.
I think this is what happens, that they are attempting to play the man, not the ball. They are determined to try and get in probably in this order, Dominic Cummings and Boris Johnson, and therefore they are throwing everything at it, regardless of the potential ramifications of this down the line. I think also if you looked at the scenes in the Commons last night, you know, people singing on the opposition benches, the attempt to stop Burko from getting out of his seat.
And this is all to stop prorogation from happening last night.
I just think that this is a parliament that is believing its own hype. You know, in reality, this is a parliament that is a useless parliament. It has achieved remarkably little, yet it seems to have a remarkably high opinion of itself.
There was a bit of an end of term feeling last night, wasn't there, Katie? You were in the Commons late. What was the atmosphere like?
Very boisterous, very bad-tempered at points. And, you know, James, they were just... Everyone seemed to have basically lost it to a certain degree on both sides. And I think there are a few scenes that struck out. So it just seemed like people had come to the end of their tether with one another. So you had Ian Austin, the Labour MP, standing up to speak. And you can hear him speaking here.
There's not a single Labour figure in the past, not a single one, who would have backed violent street protest as the Shadow Chancellor did when he called for, quote, insurrection to bring down the government, or praised rioters who he said had kicked the SHIT out of the Conservative Party's offices, or talked, well, she might not want to hear it, but I tell you this.
Why
I tell you,
you
this.
I,
well, I'm not
why
going
up.
Well, I've explained. I've explained why I'm not going over there. But
you
I tell you this. Well, I'll tell. Well, I'm here. I'm here because my vote, because voters in Dudley North sent me here to represent them.
As a Labour representative.
And my views and the things I stand up for, decency in politics, the rule of law, none of these things have changed. And
now, you can also hear on that clip Labour MP basically telling him that he is not welcome here and telling him to be quiet. I think it just added to the sense that you might not agree with where Ian Austin is in terms of his decisions with the Labour Party, his decision to leave. But if you look at his history, you look at his Jewish family, I just think there was a sense that it just felt rather callous the way it was handled. But I think that was just the mood in the Commons to a degree. You had Jeremy Corbyn being shouted down. You had Conservative MPs being, when they were actually going to prorogue Parliament, by which point I have to admit I had left Parliament.
Because that was about 1 or 2 in the morning.
Yeah, to get some sleep before this podcast. You had a situation where the Conservative MPs didn't come back to the chamber to see, or several of them didn't, to see John Burko give the final remarks, because at that point they had had enough of the other side. Then you had, when it was moving, you had all these various songs that were coming out, the Red Flag, Flower of Scotland. Now, perhaps it's just end of term matters, but I think it's another sign. This current parliament and the numbers in it can't really keep going. And Boris Johnson's currently, in a way, he's in number 10. He's almost been taken hostage because unless he wants to resign, he does have one way out. He is stuck with this parliament until they agree to an early election. I saw some talk today that they might try and stretch it out to the new year. I think that's still very unlikely, but
just skip a beat there.
Sitting in parliament last night, it just doesn't feel sustainable. And I think the way to stretch it out for much longer, I think the sides which are preventing an early election will start to come off quite badly.
There is a horrible thought, though, which is the general election could well return another parliament, which is just like this one, where there's no majority for anything. If you look at there is no guarantee that this election is going to... There should be an election because it offers some chance that this might resolve things. And letting the public have their say would be a good thing. But there is also equally every chance that we come back with another parliament where no one has a majority and we have another parliament that can't do anything. And you know what happens then? I suspect...
Do you think a second referendum might break
the deadlock? I mean, I think that probably ends up happening because if parliament can't agree, parliament would have to throw its hands up. And it would be a remarkable statement. It would be parliament having to throw its hands up and saying, we have failed so comprehensively, we are so useless that we have no choice but to have another referendum when we legislated for the first one because we couldn't resolve this ourselves. I mean, that was David Cameron's logic for the first referendum, was that the parliamentary system wasn't capable of resolving this. So you guys decide. This would be 5 years later, the parliamentary system would be saying, even after you voted, we're not capable of carrying out your instructions, so have another vote. I mean, it really would be. I mean, I do think this, you've seen this a lot, and when you hear parliamentarians seriously talking about citizens' assemblies to resolve Brexit, well, what are you if you're not a citizens' assembly? Parliament has just catastrophically failed, and it's failed because everyone knows what they're against. very few people know what they're for. And people have let the perfect be the enemy of the good repeatedly throughout this process in a way that is frankly not very grown up.
And Katie, looking at that prorogation which has started already, I mean, Boris Johnson and Jeremy Corbyn have both hit the campaign trails today. What can we see in the next few weeks?
So I think what's interesting is, if you look to the point when we were saying on this podcast things like Boris Johnson has a very clear message, actually Number 10 has brought some order back to government compared to the Theresa May era. That was before Parliament had returned. And in a way, it's quite helpful for Boris Johnson to have a situation where Parliament is not in play, because in a way, Number 10 can control the agenda to a better degree. And I think you will see, speaking to various figures in government, Number 10, you will see a return to about a fortnight ago when things were running a bit smoother. Now, will it keep up? Different. But I think, again, just going back to those key areas in any election. So I think you're going to see a renewed domestic push, but still sticking quite closely to the NHS, to education, to law and order. I think those will be the main themes still. I think that there'll be some efforts to show Boris Johnson is working towards a Brexit deal. I think that they are wanting to almost fend off the accusations you've had from figures like Amber Rudd that they aren't doing anything. But I think ultimately it's going to be used as a bit of a campaign, but much in the way it was a couple of weeks ago. So lots of visits, policy announcements, you know, weeks themed around things, and just gearing up for an election we know is coming. We just don't know the date. On the Labour side, I think that you will see similar. But I think speaking to Labour figures, I don't think that various figures in the shadow departments yet know what they're doing over this period. So I sense that there is perhaps less organisation, or perhaps it's just being kept in a tighter circle. Whereas I think Number 10, again, have always been aware that they have very limited time to get their message out before a general election. So I think they're ready to try and get back to when things were going probably a bit better for them and go back to that.
One of the risks that Jeremy Corbyn has run in rejecting this early election is Boris Johnson is the Prime Minister, and he can use, over this five-week period, the Prime Ministerial bully pulpit to, as Katie said, get his agenda out there. When he says something, okay, we can say, oh, he's got a majority of minus 43 in Parliament. What he says isn't going to become law. But it still carries more weight. When people are driving in their car and they hear the news bulletin, it says, the Prime Minister today announced that the government will, people inherently pay more attention than when they hear, the Leader of the Opposition said that if he won an election, he would do. So that, I think, is one of the big questions, is how much can they use this 5 weeks to get on the front foot, to push up their polling numbers? And then, and the other question is, you know, as Katie said, does this feel like August again? Or does this sort of Damocles that's hanging over Boris Johnson of the October the 19th and the extension letter, does that kind of almost make it very hard to get heard or anything else? And I think that's one of the questions. Because if it is like August was for Boris Johnson, when he commanded the national stage with relative ease, and he also commanded the news agenda, then I think that could be quite a good period for the Tory party. And you could see people starting to say, or maybe the opposition should have voted for the election. But if this period is dominated by, you know, legal wrangles as the 22 Tories try and get themselves back into the party, there's more splits and then it would not be a good period. So this is a question. Something that Katie and I were talking about the other day, which is, yeah, can Boris Johnson manage to impose, one of the reasons I think they wanted an election was to impose kind of campaign discipline on the Tory party. There is a sense that during a campaign that people shut up. You know, during that 2017 disastrous Tory campaign, cabinet ministers largely kept their counsel about how badly it was going and how badly it was being run, because, you know, it was a campaign and the stakes were too high. They could really do with some of that now, because they need to stop this kind of constant drip of unhelpful stories.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And you can subscribe to this podcast through all the usual routes. And I hope you've been enjoying how many we've been doing just for you. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow, or maybe later today.